President Barr, Representative Ortiz, Vice Chair Representative Fields, and myself represented as well as each year. And Representative Brown has also joined us. In the afternoon, we have a quorum to conduct business. Please remove these papers during the silence of your cell phones during the duration of the meeting. And those attending will please mute your phones if you are not speaking. Before we begin, I would like to thank Jamie Gaynor and our Tribal Affairs Secretary for her great summer century of working with all of the staffing the committee today. Today, the Tribal Affairs Committee will hear a presentation from the Department of Motor Vehicles on the topic of new ID implementation throughout rural Alaska, followed by testimony from representatives of the Association of Village Council Presidents, Clayton Hayden, and Kawarik. First, we will hear from Jenna Wright, Deputy Director of the Department of Motor Vehicles. Ms. Wright, can you begin by introducing yourself for the record and begin your presentation?
Yes, good morning, Chair Sikorski and representatives of the committee. Thank you so much for having me this morning. For the record, my name is Jenna Wright, and I am the Deputy Director of the Alaska Division of Motor Vehicles, also known as the DMV. I am honored to be here today to present Alaska's path to new ID implementation with a specific emphasis on our federal student in rural Alaska. Before I get started, I was just wondering, Chairwoman, how would you prefer to advance the slides? It looks like you have them up in the room.
Yes, we have them up in the room, so go ahead and just advance the slide when you're ready to advance and we'll take care of it.
Sounds great. Let's go to the agenda slides for next time. So I have had the opportunity to present a new ID in front of most of you before, so I'm intending to jump right into what has changed since the last time we spoke, but if someone has an idea or its requirements are helpful at any time during the presentation, please let me know, and I would be happy to speak to that. But after talking about what has changed since the last time we spoke, I will share some key statistics that we use to measure an ID. Then I will explain what DMV believes the demand for real ID is in the entire state of Alaska, and then I'll also focus on a subset of rural Alaska. And then after that, I'll talk to you about some of the ways that DMV has engaged with rural Alaska partners, and then lastly, we'll cover the ways that DMV intends to increase access to real ID in a way that is responsible as we continue to navigate the COVID-19 pandemic. So, next slide, please. Okay. So, one of the most significant changes that occurred was that former President Trump pushed the Real ID Enforcement Day out 1 year to October 1st, 2021. This gave all Alaskans and Americans an entire additional year to apply for a Real ID, which will be almost 3 years from the time that Alaska started issuing real IDs. In addition to that, Alaska DMV has a really close contact with the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, or AMVA, and we have joined many other states and the American Association of Airport Executives in voicing our support of pushing this state out even further due to the ongoing and unpredictable nature of the pandemic, all the challenges that that creates, and then, of course, the inevitable strain that would be an airport to be under as travel capacity starts to increase. So, I don't have an official announcement to share with you today, but we are optimistic that the Department of Homeland Security and the Biden administration will be receptive to those requests for another extension. The next major change was that some real ID modernization language was included in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021. And this was important because the Real ID Act was written in 2005 when there was much less reliance on electronic systems. So this act paves the way for states to be able to accept some documents electronically and potentially implement mobile ID and driver license solutions. Many of those changes, we've been told, are at least a year or maybe 2 years out because they're dependent on federal regulations being written before states can implement the changes. However, there is one change that states can implement immediately, which is a reduction in the paperwork required 42% of all credentials issued were federally compliant, which has helped us reach 32% of all unique active credentials in Alaska being federally compliant. And I say unique because there are some Alaskans that will have an ID and a driver's license, and you can only have their ID star on one. And then lastly, your website and customer satisfaction, which is the cornerstone of everything that we do and every that we measure our success. And we do have to make quite a few drastic changes to keep staff and Alaskans safe during the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm pleased to share with you guys that the Alaskans have been extremely receptive to those changes and the modifications that we've had to make. So, with that, we can scoot on to the next slide, please.
I'm going to back to the paragraph by Representative Howard. I think that you and I have already. I'll be speaking.
Okay, so this is here. It encompasses three major metrics that you may track very closely. The first is represented by the green bars, which show the number of real IDs issued by month. Representative Steele, the tribal IDs themselves don't need to be real ID compliant. It didn't change the requirements for those other 20 types of identification that TSA will accept. So the requirement from TSA is that those form IDs are recognized as government IDs and do not require a second form of ID. An expiration date is not required. So I heard that directly from TSA's SOP. So it's a little bit easier for the requirements for travel ID as compared to a state issued real ID.
Alaska tribes issue permanent available tribal IDs, i.e., if there's 74,000 tribal members, where there are also 74,000 people who have access to the tribal ID.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, there are over 200 tribes across the state of Alaska, and we haven't had the opportunity to speak with every single one. It is our understanding that there is a large prevalence of tribal IDs across the state of Alaska.
I guess I'm not sure. I mean, sometimes just reaching out, you know, maybe it's really better. I don't want to call an organization just to see are there gaps or they still come up for whatever reason, don't they ever issue tribal IDs just to see if there are any gaps. And the other question related to the end is, what about people with passports? Probably some percentage of them need to get their one day or real ID. I know I need to get this. I don't want to carry my passport in, every couple of years, for example. So, what's the kind of analysis in terms of the population of people with passports? How many people are also going to real ID because they might not want to carry their passport for travel in Alaska, for example?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, it's an excellent point, and we understand in this analysis that there is going to be room for some duplication because, like you said, some will have a preference to have multiple identification cards. And so, while we don't have survey lessons to determine how many want additional or two or more forms of identification, we did account for that in this analysis, because if you look at the slide, possible demand for the real ID is 226,000. And that doesn't even, consider the fact that almost 200,000 people in Alaska are under the age of 18 that don't need a real ID to travel. And it doesn't include all 65,000 Alaska veterans that have access to the Department of Defense IDs. What we did there is we rounded up to the number of 250,000, understanding that there were some duplication of numbers that might be a preference for that, but we don't have a way to know for sure what the exact demand will be because there is that element of price in there. So I guess I will finish up this slide just by saying there are a lot of questions that don't have unrelated compliant identification before we even consider real ID issuance. But once you layer on the fact that some of us Alaskans also have a real ID, it does paint a very encouraging picture for Alaska, which is that they've already issued real IDs to the majority of Alaskans that work with. And for those that might be ready a little closer to the deadline, whether that's October 1st next spring or even later, we certainly can have the capacity to serve them at the Alaska DMV this summer. So, if we go to the next slide, it will dive a little bit more into the specifics of rural Alaska, please. Okay. So, in this slide, we've analyzed the population and potential demand by 13 regions across the state. In the first column there, you see the total population of each region, and then we subtract the population of cities within each of those regions that have reasonable access to a DMV or a passport facility. This gives us the remaining population, and then we use U.S. Census data to estimate the number of children under 5 and veterans that would be living in each of those regions, because those under 5 would need a compliant ID and veterans have access to federal compliant department NCIDs. After those deductions, we have any other questions for the company again.
computers in the latest chart. It looks like it very likely can be issued either through a DMV or a passport facility. Is that correct?
Through the chart of representatives, really, a DMV cannot be issued in a passport except by a facility. It can only be issued by a DMV or an agent of the DMV. The reason why I put that on this slide is that a passport is a form of federally compliant IDs. And so we're trying to look at this issue holistically to ensure that we can get any federally compliant ID in the hands of Alaskans. That doesn't necessarily need to be a real ID, or one is not better than the other. It's just what Alaskans have access to.
That's a follow-up.
Follow-up question.
Is this a DMVs or BSP? Partners in kind of DMV design is like the UMVs, as well as DMVs and approach to UMVs if you're with IDs.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, yes, all of our business partners have the ability to access real IDs if they choose to make that part of their business practice. And then all of our partner agencies, what we call commission agents, where we partner with local governments and police departments and things like that, they also have the ability to issue real IDs. Through the chair, Representative Lopez, you are absolutely right in saying they don't want access to a DMV. So these regions are very large, and we do have hub locations located across Alaska. We have 17, in fact, hub locations across rural Alaska, and the populations within each of those cities would be subtracted from the region's population.
I'm just wondering, with all of the estimated population under age 5, can you remind me what the requirements are for children as it relates to an ID? I just, I'm not familiar with that.
Sure. For the chair, minors under the age of 18 do not need to present a form of compliant ID as long as they are traveling with an adult that does have a form of compliant ID.
Thank you. So, this category we're looking at is just sort of like what's that data point telling us? Is estimated population under age 5? I'm just wondering like what right is that included here? Just to kind of back out of the entire thing.
To the chair, Representative Tarr, yes, exactly. We're looking at the population of rural Alaska as a whole, and then trying to remove the pieces that we know either don't need a federally compliant form of ID or have an alternative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, like, I'm just thinking, what do we want to benefit more of the population under age 18? You see what I'm getting at? Like, what's going on between the 5-year-olds and the 18-year-olds?
Correct. So, the chair representative, absolutely, we would love to know that. And if we, so, right there on the third to last line, it says the K-12 population. That's the way that we pull out the folks that were born at 18. That's the way that we estimated them.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Please continue.
Great, thank you. So, I think that, also, after the deductions in the table above, we are left with approximately 40,000 people that could need to rely on an alternate form of ID, like a tribal ID. So then from that 40,000 number, we subtract the K-12 population of approximately 9,500 students in these communities. And So what we're having is that we can go to the next slide,
before you move on, because really I'll just do that we both into the queue to ask the question. Within that 5, 5, and 6, how did the DMV assess the demand? So I appreciate the use of data points to make assessments on the demand, but was that pulled together through consultation with different communities as well as the assessment of the data? Was it solely a tabletop review of the different data points of individuals and the assessment of the types of pieces of identification you need to speak a little bit to the assessment of demand?
The table here are side effects that we're looking at right now. Like I mentioned, it doesn't include any travel IDs that have already been issued. So what this table shows is that it's data that we know to be in fact. Indisputable, the estimations. Back to the Representative Field question earlier, with 200 different tracks across the state, it was difficult for us to narrow down exactly how many travel IDs were available or had already been issued, more importantly. We know some regions, like the Bell region, have a very high travel ID presence, and it was their goal to issue a representative number of travel IDs by the Rail ID Enforcement Day. So we know that there are some tracks that have a very large presence and then others that we don't know as much about. And so in these slides, it was my intent to illustrate the facts that we know about the demand and then leave room for any other more testimony to talk with other data leaders this morning about having their implementation travel IDs as a complement to Rail IDs.
Thank you. Sorry for addressing the question.
Thank you. I'll go back to the primary pump region. And because in my presentation, I refer to these as communities and our communities, but I assume because of the primary region that you include people who live outside the communities that are part of the region. So, and that's important for areas like myself that I represent, because if you live outside of a community and say, there's a very good chance you also live maybe on a different island without road access, those kinds of things. So is the term region specifically describing or just around representative communities, or is it specifically talk about the population and the people within them?
So the chart representing Hertz, it is the entire region, regardless of its own, it was like a hub city and then road access to other communities. The only thing that we took out was in that second column, we subtracted the population of areas with access to the DMV. Sure. So the total population in the first column includes all cities within that region that are in rural Alaska, regardless if they have a DMV now or not, or if they're connected to other communities in the road system in rural Alaska. The only population that was deducted from each of those regions was the cities that had access to the DMV or passport facility, and that wasn't done until that second column.
Number,
from the chair, Representative Cortez. We're trying to understand everyone else in the don't have access to any form of federally compliant ID specific to rural on the side. So, well, as we were talking earlier, some of us means they have a preference to have multiple identification cards, but it was not the intent of this analysis. We were trying to determine who doesn't have access. Pursued many appeals and seeking engagements,
first year, the year before, and we had tons of rebuild in the land of COVID. But previously, when DMV had presented to this committee, it had been noted on record that ultimately there was one FTE or a crucial FTE that was committed to outreach to rural Alaska about the impending deadline really to realize the requirements. Can you speak to the resources that currently are set aside for assessing the demand or advocating the changes as Representative Ortiz is speaking to? What are the resources set aside within the DMV to make sure that there's people who want to rural Alaska on the impending dangers?
Yes. And we have that same FTE dedicated to engagement for DMV in rural Alaska. I'm thinking about the list of communities that has grown to over 50 at this point, and that FTE has remained in contact with those people and keeps that list up to date so that we make sure we're sharing relevant information. So that FTE is dedicated. And then in addition to that, we also talk about Real ID success at a senior leadership level.
We would partner with the community to find a space
need, again, just any updates. So I appreciate your help me, but previously there had been somewhat of a fat bar with respect to bringing the DMV into a community where a certain threshold of residents had to qualify or have all of their paperwork in order, which I believe we talked about in the last committee. It's not necessarily the case when if you're on a rent agreement, you're able to easily access a DMV. You can go in as many times as you need to get all of your paperwork in order, but that was not the case in rural Alaska. Can you speak to the process for community leaders and community members to request a mobile unit to travel to the whole community? What does that require?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of documentation that is required for real ID, and it's very specific. So if anyone's got married or divorced or changed their name or perhaps has a different name on their social security card and their birth certificate, it can create complications and it can create an environment where they may need to go back to those source agencies and get the proper documentation before a DMV is authorized to issue a real ID. And so what we don't want to happen is that when we go to a community, we show up and some of the residents don't have the proper documentation. So in order to combat that and set the community up for success, we work with a point of contact in each of those communities and train them on what it is that the real ID documentation requirements are. So that person is able to pre-screen documents for the residents so that when the DMV shows up, they're set up for success. And then in terms of our question around the minimums, we ask for at least 50 people have been able to go through that process with the pre-screener in the community, and that pre-screener has been able to confirm that 50 people are running for us so that when we show up, we can make that positive impact.
Thank you. Can you speak to if that community's contact is not an individual that's created by DMV for the hours that they're providing these DMV-related services?
Yes. So the person that would be contacted for DMV is a full-time DMV employee that would be paid at our DMV's operating budget.
Can I clarify my question? The individual within the community that answered questions, is that individual paid by DMV for their hours of service that they're providing for this state service?
Thank you for the clarification. No, ma'am.
A follow-up question. The mobile unit, has the department considered a supplement service when we get closer to the potentially revised enactment date? Is there an opportunity to provide supplement staff, so those who can get in-person customer service, to travel out to communities and help individuals get their documents in order? Or is there an opportunity to provide payment to the individual that's doing pre-screening and DMV documents?
In terms of staffing, DMV is prepared to allocate as many staff members as is needed to make them successful. But the department has not considered supplementing payment to the community as other than providing DMV staff members.
Before I move on, I would just note that with the tens of millions of dollars that the DMV returns to Alaska Treasury every year, that it's an opportunity lost in partnering with local community residents to, if the community resident is providing resources that supplement the work on the DMV, that would be done typically by a DMV staffer in an office on the ground system to be compensated for that work or to provide creative partnerships with community leaders or financial supplement back with DMV staff directly in travel. Seems like an opportunity to explore. All right, I believe we are on the last bullet. I want to give you a chance to continue.
Sorry, thank you.
Okay, we'll have another question, Representative Tara.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
curious, you know, even with the opportunity to do some pre-screening, and this is kind of in the area that I represent, and not really at all, but because some of the requirements of the documentation, the housing documentation, or like the utilities for people who are renters, what kind of flexibility do you have to, you know, sort of, like, do things that would work for Alaska, you know, kind of some of that particular, because if I'm not remembering, it's like the five different sort of columns, and some of them are things that you might have, but then where I've heard that issues is, you know, that kind of thing, particularly if, yeah, like you say, if you're a renter or something like that, so things aren't in your name, or just some of the housing situations that are more like shared housing and,
something like this, you're going to have to provide that service in order to get people this idea. So, yeah, there's a couple of where's the solution? I have a question that someone brought up to me. On these real IDs, the picture, you know, when people are concerned that this is a spatial recognition picture, can you clarify this for me?
Sure, I would be happy to. So for the camera recording the program itself is, so the spatial recognition topic is put in place because it's a fraud prevention measure. So when the DMA takes a photo, that photo isn't going to stay in a national database or anything like that. What we do is we use spatial recognition software to remove that photo against our existing database of photos to ensure that there is no fraud occurring when we issue these identification cards.
Okay, so this would not, this photo would not be, you know, sent to the gallery, stored there, and used down the road.
No, we're not. Again, it just is right against Alaska State database.
Thank you.
But how often does that happen that you experience fraudulent, you know, people seeking relevant IDs fraudulently? Through the chair, Representative Taylor, fortunately, not frequently, but it does happen a handful of times per year. Most commonly, it would be a sister trying to get another sister's ID or something like that.
Thank you, Troy, for that update, and we look forward to the follow-up information, and I appreciate you offering to come to the today. If you don't mind, still a little longer.
I would be happy to. Thank you so much for having me this
morning. Next up, we'll share from representatives of Coherent. We have Carol Pascoya, as well as Sherry McConnell on the line. If you can begin by introducing yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Carol Pascoya. I'm a community service division vice president of SLAC. I just want to summarize a little bit about the testimony that I'm going to give. And you are going to take the line, the
travel app Thank you. Again, we want to thank you for the opportunity to share our perspective. Hope and have a stage.
Orleans Community Department has been.
Thank you for the invitation. Any questions? I do have one. President Pearson, you mentioned that tribal members with tribal ABs have indicated challenges with Homeland Security or TSA representing those tribal ABs. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, unfortunately, not all TSA agents are versed or stand with tribal ID traffic, so they will tell them to our citizens that they're not acceptable for when we are in the federal register. And so we've told our citizens they have to push back and demand to speak to a manager or somebody of higher authority.
Certain things
that you can
quantify how often
you're hearing that is happening, and can you maybe also speak to, is that resolved? Is that going to draw? Does it cause anxiety for traveling? Can you speak a little bit more to that?
It certainly causes anxiety. I would say pre-pandemic, it would happen that we get these kind of contact
running with them, you know, a couple times a month. Again, we have 33,000 tribal citizens traveling all across the nation. I myself have traveled across the border numerous times. I use my tribal ID exclusively just to kind of prove a point frankly. And I have had that problem. I'm also pretty aggressive about it. So when I have been questioned, I get to the back down very quickly. I have enough knowledge that I appear or seem normal within them, so they back down.
And you mentioned help the tribe that your data has designed to help the DMV meet its goals. Can you talk about the work that CBNI has done to help the DMV at Alaskan tribal citizens in your region?
Well, that's the irony representing Mr. Kowalski. I listened to the very first speaker on behalf of the state this morning and mentioned that she's working with tribes, reaching out to tribes. I contacted my own staff right away to see if we had been in. As the largest tribe in Alaska, right here in Juneau, located. We have never reached out to us at all. So, but we would love to work with them. We'd love to be able to assist in our villages and make sure that we can do what we can. We have, just so you know, our tribal IDs are on par with the real ID. We have the hologram, we have expiration date. So, you know, our staff is first and understands that. Been extensively trained, we have very expensive equipment, we made extensive investments so that we have the top of one IDs.
Can you speak to the amount of investment that the DMV has made on this particular issue?
Yeah, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars in equipment and training.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for presenting to me. I have four daughters that I know last year, so I'm traveling from Kilk to Haines, you know, crossing the border, and I kind of was like you, I decided to kind of push me to stay safe. I just had their birth certificates and the CIDP cards. And, so how does that CIDP card work anymore? Are they recognizing that? Or is a tribal card probably more needed at this point?
Well, the certification ID blood card, again, that's a federal issued card, so they really can't deny it. But it's a backup documentation that does not have photo. It's probably more important to have the tribal ID card with a photo now. And I've traveled back and forth several times now and had no problems using mine on the border, even in Buffalo, New York, or
opportunity for a tribal consultation or inquiry. We trained at PIDA even prior to the COVID-19 pandemic to allow them potential opportunities for best practices in terms of helping rural Alaskans meet the real ID standards.
Well, that was our at the beginning of what would be considered consultation. You know, again, we live in a state that doesn't formally recognize the 229 tribes in Alaska. So we have gotten like postcards type information, but formal consultation, no.
Thank you for your presentation before our committee today. We appreciate your time and your on tribal issues. Next, we will hear from Vivian Corpus, President and CEO of the Association of Village Council Presidents. Ms. Corpus, please introduce yourself and our board and begin your presentation.
Good morning. Can I have just a sound check? Can you hear me
quickly? Yes, you sound good.
Thank you. I do have prepared statements. Good morning. My name is Vivian Corpus. I serve as the Chief Executive Officer for the Association of Village Council Presidents. Thank you for taking time this week to focus on real ID implementation and its impact on rural Alaska. And thank you for inviting me to testify on behalf of the Association of Village Council Presidents and our region tribes. And before we go on, I really want to say that to the credit and Claude for their contributions this morning. They both have very valuable insights and experience as we do in our region regarding realizing. So glad to both of you. Thank you. FCP is the largest tribal discussion in the nation with 56 federally recognized tribal members. We are located on the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta, bordering the Yukon River, Kuskokwim River, and Bering Sea Coast. Whenever I give testimony to the federal government, and in this case to the state government, I describe rural America as extreme rural America. As you know, the FCP region is about the same size as the state of Washington. And it's entirely of the road system, meaning the only way to our region is by flying or barge in the summertime. Transportation in region is by small plane or boat in the summertime and snow machine by or the asphalt in the winter if it exists. The population in our region is approximately 26,000 people. Regarding the real ID implementation in rural Alaska. Over the past few years, AVCP has invested time and attention to early deliver services. Our service in high level is based on providing services at the village, sub-region, regional, and beyond the region level. This is helping us to become more successful in what we do. To me, the question of how the state of Alaska can meet its obligations to serve all Alaska is the question of service delivery. The state has citizens that live in the largest cities of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. The state has citizens that live along the road system, and the state has citizens that live off the road system in rural Alaska. The state using the division of motor vehicles as an example has a model for delivering services to citizens or the road system. Most of them have one or more DMV locations in their communities or within reasonable driving distance. In our region, we have one DMV location here in Buffalo. That's one location in an area the size of the state of New York or Washington. What does this mean? This means we have a lack of access to a service that the state has a responsibility to provide. This issue has become critical because the first of October 2019,
or
opportunity to ensure a successful woman ID rollout?
We have worked with the local health care systems in communicating. And to tell you the truth, I don't know where those suicides were that they tried, that they have tried to do pilot projects in the office on the go, the portable service. I don't know. I'd be curious to find out where those two locations are. We have a good working relationship with them. Local office. I have physically myself gone down there to try to engage in asking if they can talk with. When I heard that comment, my question to myself was, is it true? I actually asked myself, is that really true? Because we would definitely want to partner with the NV to assure that the same services for us reaching into our communities would be extended.
And the final question from me is going to be, can you speak to if you might have estimated the state today made an assessment that it's reached a saturation point for Alaskan to desire a real ID or a compliant new ID if they don't have a trans ID. Would you agree with that assessment with respect to the tribes and the communities and the
where people are turning to us? Thank you for the question. In the working health region, we have a lot of need. Residents who have quite a bit into the transport system here in Buffalo and then going to Anchorage. And we have a lot of young people traveling to school. And we have others who need attention either in the medical field or some other purpose for traveling. I can tell you there are many, many personal stories about how hard it is to obtain a real ID and the availability of that access to people in the villages. I look at my own family. I have to try to get my real ID 3 times, and it was really, really difficult. I don't think the assessment by the state telling me the truth addresses the real need of how important the real ID is to communities, individuals, residents up to how much they need that service. How much we need that service.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? All right, seeing none, we would like to extend our sincere appreciation to Deputy Director Jenny Wright for an update on the work that you've been doing amidst the COVID-19 pandemic on this issue. Keep us posted on what you hear regarding if the center is offered on the reality implementation that I'm representing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I didn't get all the questions. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. If you still want to.
Deputy Director Wright, are you still on the line?
Yes.
Thank you. So, I'm going to come back to the photo again. Thanks to re-clarify. So, you have made this picture, and it's used in the state database from 3 days. If it goes to the state database, is that database shared with the federal database?
Yeah, but it's
okay, thank you. And getting back to real ID has pretty much been forced upon us by the federal government.
Yeah.
this court case is going to know, you know, some other things that will help some of the other folks, like State President Peterson talked about that, some of the barriers. But she specifically mentioned, you know, perhaps that one position in Bethel is not enough, you know, to meet the needs of the region, and that if there were some additional positions there, that they might be able to help with that early preparation. And I'm sorry, I know you were saying that you were doing some of that pre-COVID, but I just wanted to circle back and get an update. I do sit on the Department of Administration Budget Subcommittee, and I don't recall, I mean, except for the closures, that was the big DOP, you know, story. So I don't recall any additional staffing, and I wondered if you considered or heard her suggestions and her any comments about that.
Sure, through the chair, I did hear that comment. The challenge that you run into in rural Alaska, or really any office that has one or two people staffing it, is that when one of those people move on, you know, have extended leave for whatever reason, or sick, it has a proportionate effect on those offices and the ones that are like Anchorage or have more people that are able to cover. And so, for my working with those offices over the last 2.5 years. So that's the biggest challenge, is we have reps that move on to another job or that somebody have labor or something like that that they're expecting. So I think those are the biggest things that they run into. And then in terms of for this particular topic, additional PCNs in the rural areas would be a short-term solution. It's a short-term problem, right? And then we would be working at having those PCNs for an additional amount of time. So instead, what we've done is we've used offices like Anchorage, Fairbanks, potentially Juneau, and identified people within each of those offices that could travel if there was a need at Mobile Alaska. So instead of having the people come from Bethel, they might come from Anchorage to some of the surrounding communities.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Deputy Manager. And matter of fact, I guess it just sounds like there's some of the thinking possibly to do on that to make sure that the resources are available. And the DMV is one of the agencies that has positive revenue. So, you know, in terms of thinking about resources, yeah, it would be nice to do some kind of, you know, non-permanent short-term positions or something that could be specific to the implementation and also just the communication, because over and over what we hear is providing these documents. And I live in Anchorage, you know, I know many people have had difficulty for various reasons that I mentioned earlier. So I know that, you know, we've heard the reasons that that is more challenging in some of the other places. So, you know, just to think that it's related to people getting access to medical care really helps the priority for me, because you know, people need to come into, you know, into the hub cities to get medical care. And, you know, I just don't want us to be in a position where someone's health is impacted because of, you know, not having an ID that can allow them to travel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What exactly are the required concerns on the LDB?
Through the chair, Representative Crump. So, in order to get an ID, you need to be able to prove your identity, which is most commonly, well, your identity and lawful status, which are most commonly done through a birth certificate or a passport. You need to be able to prove your social security number, which can be done with the social security card itself, a W-2 or 1099, providing they show the full social. And then you also need to prove a principal residency. And we have a long list of ways that we can accomplish that. I believe I spoke earlier about ways that we modify that to be for Alaska as well.
Well, thank you. I can see that I bring you a real challenge across different places. And it just seems to me that we need to continue working on simplification of ways to get these documents, whether it's online. And I think a solution, especially for rural Alaska, whether it's in a village or a small community, and I just brought up the village, it's almost like if you're having a mobile unit, meeting scheduled out, you know, 3 or 4 months, and then work with the village council and tribal entities to help all those people get the documents they need. Otherwise, it becomes a waste of time for you getting out there and getting your tribal IDs versus if you're getting out 40 or 50 if you have that planning time. So it's a big challenge, but I think there's ways to make it a lot more successful, and having that mobile unit is really the key to making this happen. So thank you.
We'll be hearing the presentation on the topic of our public safety, and this meeting is now adjourned.